Friends, let me tell you a little bit about the microphones we use on this podcast. In my home studio, I'm using the PodMic, an XLR mic with a deep, rich sound. When combined with my Zenix mixer with built-in preamp, the sound it produces is incredible. My dad, at his house, uses the Podcaster mic, a USB mic I used to use on this show, as well as other podcasts I've done in the past. Even 12 years after I purchased it, it still produces radio broadcast quality sound. What do both of these mics have in common? Well, they're both produced by Rode. Rode has really developed a big focus on podcasting, and their gear is just incredible. They have a tool on their website, Rode.com, that's R-O-D-E, that will help you find the right equipment for your needs. But even if you've been at podcasting for a while and want to upgrade your gear, the PodMic is an awesome choice at a great price. If you want to go a little higher end, I'd recommend the Podcaster or its XLR cousin, the Procaster. If you opt for the PodMic or Procaster, I would recommend a mic preamp or a mixer with a built-in preamp like a Behringer Zenix mixer, or, if you really want to go all out, the Rodecaster Pro. To find the ideal Rode mic for you, visit Rode.com. Once you find that perfect piece of equipment, they will link you to your favorite music outlet that can make it yours. That's from Rode, the industry leader in podcasting. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the Moderate Podcast. Jimmy Davis here on Saturday, June 13th, 2020. We're coming at you a day earlier than normal. Normally, we would be with you on the on Sunday. That's our normal day that we broadcast. And but now we actually, the reason I had to move it up a day was because we've got something that's going on outside of the house that I'm going to be able to go to that doesn't involve work. So I'm really, really excited about that, actually. And so it has to do with my daughter's dance, and so that's going to be exciting. Get to see her a little bit again. She's at dance camp this weekend, and so that's going to be pretty cool. But today, it is the second, usually we do this on the second Sunday, but it is the second Saturday of the month. So what that means is,
now, from the mountains of Southern California, here is Jim Davis Sr.
How'd you like that entrance? Intro, Dad. How's it going?
I'm back.
So, yeah, so we've got you on the show today, and I did want to, you know, where we're going to go in this episode, we haven't really, I haven't really done any show prep this week because it's been a crazy, crazy week. We haven't really had a chance to talk much this week, Dad, but so this will probably be a conversation as much as it is just the how we do on the show. But this week on Monday and Tuesday, I actually had to work a lot. I was up to, I got home about 7 on Monday and then got right back on my computer and started working again. I was done about 11 that day. And then, of course, we had city council on Tuesday. So that was another few hours. And then I had to have a long conversation with my boss and the HR director because one of the things that's going on is, you know, we still are dealing with the economic impacts of the coronavirus shutdowns and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we've been having to strategize on how we're going to plug that budget bill. And of course, that does probably mean some talks with a lot of labor groups. And so we did have those conversations. So that was another thing that we did this week. But just a lot of different things, going on. And then we, of course, you know, we're in the midst of this whole, defund the police debacle. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about as a COP, and we had a chance to talk a little bit before we went on the air. So I know you've been on back on one COP patrol. Did you work any of the protests that were happening up in your area?
Well, from COP's perspective, we're on stage two, I guess, and they want us, or stage three, I can't remember which, but we're back in. But there's rules like when we go into the station, we have to get our temperature before we can go out.
Yeah.
First thing we do before we can even sign in or anything. And he didn't want us down to the protest or anything. The protest up here went fairly well. And we used to, when we patrol, we go down to get mail. We're not getting mail right now. We're also not. We used to get out of our cars just to be eyes and ears for the sheriffs and just to be visible. We'd walk around the village, but he doesn't want us to walk around the village right now. So there are a few restrictions. So we're mainly just patrolling, and that's what we do. We are eyes and ears of the sheriffs, and if we see anything, we back away and call it in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what we do up here.
Okay.
And the protest went fairly smooth. We had a protest up here a week ago Friday.
Yeah. Hey, can I do me a favor and try to speak a little bit, because your voice is a little bit weak today. You tired?
Yeah. Got up at 6 this morning.
Well, you have no why did you get up at 6? Well, don't you usually get up early though?
Yeah. It depends. If I go to bed kind of early for me, and then I get up. Usually I stay up around to midnight, but I went to bed kind of early.
Okay.
Did you see I had a bear come by?
Oh, yeah, I did see that. I saw you posted that on Facebook, yeah.
Well, I know, and I woke up during the middle of the night with your mother going, Bill, come here. At 1 o'clock in the morning, I walked in the office, and I'm looking out 4 feet away from a bear on our steps right there.
Yeah.
She has a window, not open, but the shade's up, and I'm like, oh, gosh. A little bit more closer than I want to be to a bear.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I would imagine.
It was a big one. And he was sitting right there on our steps right there walking down the side of the house. And it's like, oh.
Yeah. So, you know, so in terms, and I, you know, in my discussions with our labor folks, go ahead.
I was going to ask you about, is anything feeling like it's getting a little bit back to normal or still in when we talk about, like you want to talk about subject we were talking about, you work closely with them. I wonder, you know, you were asking my feelings. I wonder what your feelings is with them, or have you heard from them?
Well, yeah. So let's get into that subject. So obviously, right, one of the big things that has come out of this whole George Floyd, death, murder, however you want to phrase it, and, you know, kind of projecting that incident onto the national scene in terms of overall the talk about the relationship between the police and the public, and then the police and certain members of certain groups. And so one of the things that we've always talk about is with our groups is just how they're doing mentally, because, you know, it's just like, I compared it to Muslims, actually, in terms of, you know, when we talk about generalizing Muslims as terrorists and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people have done that, and that's very xenophobic to do. But to me, I think it's the same thing with lumping in all police as them being the same as Derek Chauvin. You know, there have been incidents where police do abuse their power, but it's such a small number. I mean, we talked about the millions and millions of contacts that the police have with the public on any, you know, on any given day and any given year. It's in the millions. And so when you have, you know, so few incidents relative to those numbers, it's, you know, it's a fraction of a percent. Now, when it happens, there are some times where it shouldn't happen, and there's other times where it's justified. And I think that people's problem is, look, that the police kind of have the advantage in that situation because there's more often than not they get believed, or they you know, it's my word against them, and usually the court system is going to believe the police officer more than a suspect. But that doesn't mean, though, that it's this big common thing that's happening everywhere and it's a systemic problem. I think it's an isolated incidents, but it does though get into the bigger conversation about what we talked about, systemic racism, and whereas I don't like that term. I think it's very it creates a lot of disunity. You know, if we're trying to talk about a unifying message and a unifying
Well, stats itself tells you it's really not systemic racism, so that should be off the table. Not to say that there isn't bad cops, which is a good thing. Let's bring that to the light. Focus on that. And were you going to talk about defunding police?
Well, yeah. So we'll get to that in a moment. But, you know, in terms of just talking to the officers in the city that I work in, and, you know, I've got a lot of good relationships with those guys. They're good guys. They don't like seeing this kind of thing happen. They don't like what happened to George Floyd. They think it's wrong, and they think it's,
I work for the sheriffs, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. I volunteer, and for them, I know a lot of them, I'm sure you'll say the same thing with the one police you know. They're probably more mad about what happened than anybody else.
Right.
Because that's not who most of them are. And it's like the Muslims and stuff. They're good people and stuff. When the Muslim does something bad, I'm sure they're more mad about it because it puts them in a bad light. And it's the same thing here. The police couldn't be more upset about this.
Right.
Because everybody wants to paint them as all... they're just kind of going overboard that way when they really shouldn't be, my opinion.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I was asking, you know, some of the officers, you know, what's the morale like in the department right now with everything that's going on? And I think, you know, our community, the particular city that I work in, the community has poured out a lot of support for the officers, and they know they can separate the good ones from the bad ones. And one of the things that our department takes pride in is not doing this kind of thing, not being involved in these kind of controversies, and being the, you know, really trying to be the good guys and trying to protect the community and doing things for the right reason. You know, obviously it's not going to be a clean job always all the time. They're going to have altercations with suspects, but when they're doing it, it's justified. And they take pride in the fact that they don't cost the city a lot of money in terms of lawsuits. And, you know, they really, you know, I can't think of a time that they've had a major lawsuit in the 6 years that I've been with the city. Incidents where they've had to shoot to kill. And, you know, they hate it. And a lot of times you have a lot of those guys having PTSD from having to go through that situation, because it's not like they like going out there and killing anybody. They want at the end of their shift, they want to have done the right thing. They want to be alive, and they want everyone they interacted with to be alive. That's their goal. That's their goal every single day. And so, they said the morale's okay. But they still feel, you know, one of them was telling me that they were talking to, another officer, and they're saying, you know, I feel the hate out there right now. Because, you know, you see in surrounding cities, they've been helping out surrounding cities that have had some issues, but nothing in the city that I work in itself. That's kind of been the message. That's been the morale. And I think that, you know, our city council has condemned what happened in Minnesota. They support the rights for people to protest peacefully. But at the same time, they also said, we also are behind our police officers, because our police officers aren't like that. They aren't like those other guys. They actually do treat the community with respect, and they do treat everybody with respect, regardless of their race, you know, nationality, sexual orientation, whatever you want to say.
Well, they don't like the term a lot of times when the press are talking about bad apples, but that is true and stuff. But even though, like, this incident happened, the police have come actually a long way from avoiding a lot of that. They got, you know, cameras in the cars. And people don't understand, you know, that you wouldn't know it, but when anything like that happens, you know, your aunt works for LAPD.
Right, right.
That is strongly investigated, very strongly.
Right.
So, and it didn't used to be. Remember, they would sweep it on the rug. The cops used to get away with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look in the past and you see that. And it's really has come a long way. People don't really realize how long it's coming. You got body cams and you got all kind of other stuff and you got a different training than they used to have. And it was a good old boys back, you know, like I said, and you can probably ask any police officer been one for a long time how much it has changed.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's just it. You know, I mean, I think that there is more accountability than there used to be. It's still not perfect. And I think there's individual departments that have done a bad job of that. I think Minneapolis, you know, you look at other issues they've dealt with in the past, they are one of those departments that has operated quite poorly. And so that's probably why you're seeing a push there, you know?
Yeah, and I can almost understand it because, like I said, this guy here, when you see his record and you're like, well, how did he stay in the force like that with the record like he has? How did he? And I actually, to be honest, I feel bad for the training officers that was there for this their second and third day. And you know, they are telling people they should speak out more. But I mean, you know, I mean, I trained with my commander mm-hmm. the first, you know, 10 times I went out.
Right.
And you don't. They were trying to do something, but the thing is why in the world was this guy a training officer? That's
right.
The biggest thing to me.
Right.
There's
yeah.
There's no way in the world, now with his background, should he have been a training officer? If I'm those people that, like I said, I'd be completely furious mm-hmm. that they put him as a training officer and put me with a guy.
Well, usually those training, you know, and that's another thing that sometimes I think they're looking at is a lot of those training assignments, because there's usually a premium that goes with them in pay, they usually go by seniority. So it's not necessarily that they go by merit, they go by seniority. And that's where some people have problems with the unions and how they operate. And so I can see how they may have a problem with that. So now, in terms of what Minneapolis is actually trying to do and in their situation, they voted on Friday, yesterday, to unanimously passed a resolution to replace the police department. So the council will pursue a community-led public safety system as a replacement. So to me, it's community-based policing, which a lot of departments already do, and they're calling it a public safety system. So it almost sounds like they're really not doing a whole lot. It sounds like they're just renaming it. But they're also talking about how I think that they're going to try to, you know, instead of spending more money on officers, they're going to spend money on more social services. And in theory, that sounds great. There's probably a need for that. I think in general, like mental health services and, you know,
And I agree. And also, I heard too that they're going to stop, like, you know, I don't think they're going to completely disband the police department because she doesn't have an idea when they ask her with her what she wants to do there, disband. They said, well, what if you got an active shooter? Mm-hmm. You need an armed police officer responding. What do you do?
Yeah.
And her answer was, we don't have all the answers. So it shows that they hadn't completely thought this all out.
Right.
But then, too, they can also. What I heard today, matter of fact, I heard today that they might start sending police officers, you know, like not sending police officers out on non-crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like neighbors dispute with each other.
Right.
It's not really a crime. You can possibly do that. I would like to see if they could do it and see if it works.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean,
you don't necessarily need an armed, but then they also say you don't need an armed person when you go to a domestic violence. Well, you almost do there because just the other day, in the past week, there have been two or three officers killed responding to domestic.
Oh, no. Yeah,
that's
you
a
definitely.
Different situation.
No, it is absolutely a different situation. That is actually one of the hardest calls for officers
yeah,
to go on.
Exactly.
Those are the most dangerous
that's
calls.
The worst call.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but I can understand, like you said, there's neighbors that dispute. There's other things like I said, non-criminal, like you said, they get a lot of non-criminal calls mm-hmm. that they don't really need to respond to. And maybe, you know, they could do something like that.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see if it'll work.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's the
let
point.
Them be, if they think that that's good, then let them be the example and show us how it works.
Well, and here's the thing. I think that instead of looking at it, you know, they're one of the quotes they had was that, you know, no amount of reforms will prevent lethal violence and abuse by some members of the police departments against members of our community. You know what? That is true. You're going to have bad apples. But I think that it starts with the hiring process and making sure you have, you know, one of the big things that our police department does in their background is they do a psych evaluation, and it's a very comprehensive psych evaluation. We've had people that have dropped out of the process as a result of that. And so you got to test the mental fitness. You do a very comprehensive background check on these people beyond, I think, what is the minimum required. And then you invest a lot in training. A lot of our officers, because we have a homeless issue that we've been dealing with, you know, in all of Orange County, really, but our city has been at the forefront of that because we've actually gone out and proactively trained a lot of our officers on how to deal with the homeless and the mental, you know, mental health issues of aspects of it. And I think they did that originally in response to the Kelly Thomas incident. So the Kelly Thomas incident happened in a different city, but I think the lessons learned from that is that you have to learn how to deal with the mentally ill. Now, if people outside of Southern California may not have heard about this, but there was a mentally ill white man named Kelly Thomas that was killed by police officers as a result of a beating. So they basically beat him to death. And but he really was just, you know, he had lots of run-ins with them. But the big thing with him is he had a schizophrenia and he was bipolar. And so he had a lot of mental health issues. And these officers were not trained on how to deal with somebody with mental health problems. And so one of the things that our department did was they created a team that basically all their job is to go out and talk to the homeless, talk to, you know, have be able to deal with the mentally ill and properly how to, you know, deal with them. They had a, they contracted with a mental health professional, a doctor that assisted with them, did training and things like that. And so it's things like that that I think need to be done to really truly,
well,
you know, make a difference.
Exactly. That's the problem. Now, the Black Lives Matter, I can almost understand, you know, they like said, we're sick of this stuff and they don't want any police, or they want to defund the police and send it out there. And the thing is I can understand what they want, but that might be the opposite of what they need to
right.
fix the situation.
Right.
Which the elected officials should see that and understand that, because most what I hear is, it ain't that you want to defund the police. You actually want to train them better, so you might want more funding. Because if you defund them, they might take. You might end up with less officers. You might end up with less training.
Well, you're gonna end
and
up with worse officers too.
I heard people saying to fix it. A lot of people saying you actually need to fund them more, because then ain't like they you know, and like you know, they need to maybe fund them more so they can get better training. And
and track better, you know, officers too. I mean, you think that that areas that
it
have
takes money to do that,
right? I mean, you get, you know, one of our officers said it best. We're in negotiations with them because of the coronavirus budget cuts, and one of them said it very, very eloquently. You get what you pay for.
Exactly.
You get
what
you pay for.
I have a good example of that. I went to Steak and Shake yesterday, mm-hmm. and McDonald's is next door.
Right.
McDonald's is all right, but I paid like for us two burgers and a fry and a couple of shakes was $27.
Right.
But it was excellent.
Well, yeah.
We both looked at each other and said, man, you get what you pay for.
Well, you look at In-N-Out. You look at In-N-Out and how they pay their employees. And when's the last time you went to In-N-Out and had your order screwed up?
Yeah.
When's the last time you haven't been greeted with a smile?
Yeah. Instead of, like I said, defund them, go in there, weed out the bad cops, get to, you know, pay the other cops more. So you get, you know, and then you can, if you're paying them more, you can demand more.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and you get what you pay for. And then, you know, you're going to have, and that's the problem with, I understand what they want, but how you get there is with the, always the $64,000 question is, and defunding it, that's just a slap, you know, knee slap thing that, you know, you think of, you know, right off the bat because they were upset. But that's, that I don't think is, that's the answer. Well, I think most people want, and it just shows it in Minnesota when she, they want to just disband it, and they ask them, what are you going to do? Somebody breaks in your house at 2 in the morning. What are you going to do if you've got an active shooter? She has no answers to that.
Right.
And you can't just completely.
Well, I mean, you can't rely on other agencies to then respond to you too, because you're still going to have to pay them to do that.
Well, you know, that's what they don't, they kind of miss. They said, well, you know, the police have been defunded before or disbanded. Yeah, they have been, and they brought in other agencies like the sheriff.
Right, right, exactly.
So they have got rid of police. Well, you know that. They've got rid of police departments, but you have to have something there.
Right.
And the bottom line is better training. And I think things are getting better. That's so people don't really understand, but And that's another thing, too, which I feel bad about the police officers. It's like any situation. The bad is magnified, especially in the media.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so magnified, and they play it over and over. But they never, you know, which is, isn't really news, ain't really exciting when you show what they do. I've seen a video of them, like, taking, you know, a little baby out of, you know, and they don't, you know, most of the time, I understand they think it's racism when they get stopped. That's maybe their perception. But a lot of times the officer doesn't even know what color they are when they're stopping them. And then, two, all the times they saved. They've saved babies on the side of the road. They've jumped into stuff, you know, went into burning buildings. They pulled people out of burning cars and accidents and stuff. And that's never, you know, glorified or... It's just part of their job, and it just shows a lot of, you know, like I said, you don't really see all the good they do, and it is definitely a lot more good than it is bad.
Right, right, exactly. That is very true, because, you know, here's the thing. It's like you're not gonna report on the day-to-day things that they do, because you'd be doing is reporting that all day, because that's 99% of their interactions, probably more than that. And... You know, I think that, you know, where
I think it's the same way with them. You know, it's hard for us to be in the shoes of minority because we're not there.
Right.
In the same token, it's hard to be in the shoes of a police officer. And I was doing this one police officer. It was a one like day thing. All the stuff he did in the daytime, it was like amazing and stuff. And then, you know, you have to wear the bulletproof vest and you have to do all that stuff. And when you see what he goes through in just one day, and it's like I said, it's usually, you know, 80% boredom and then 20% just adrenaline and all the stuff you have to go through.
Right.
And they actually do an amazing job. And unless you've been in their shoes and see the situations and stuff that they have to deal with, it's hard to judge them.
I mean, honestly, I think that if you have, you know, all the people that are protesting police brutality and things like that, I mean, you have, number one, people have a right to protest. Obviously, the looting and the riots, that's a completely separate issue. But if you look at the peaceful protests, people have 100% right to do that. The other thing they have a right to do is do a ride-along. If you have a problem with police, before you actually go out there, especially if you're, you know, when they talk about white privilege, you know, if you see these white people that are out there protesting and basically apologizing just for being white, I mean, they should maybe go out. Those are the types of people that should go do a ride along and see what it's really like. If you want to see the other side of the issue, if you really truly want to educate yourself, you have the absolute right to go on a ride along. So do it. You know, I mean, there's certain exceptions, you know, in terms of, you know, criminal record and things like that. But yeah, for the most part, you know, the vast majority of people have that.
I've been on ride-alongs.
Yeah.
And really, you know, you educate yourself.
Right. I mean, and do it in a few different cities. Do it in a city that's doing well. Do it in a city that's more, maybe has more crime.
You know, there's this black officer in Detroit. I think he went on to be, I'm not sure if he went on to be the chief or whatever, but in his younger days, he was stopped, and the police there kind of, you know, treated him badly because he was black. And instead of, you know, like I said, hating the police and stuff, he said, I'm going to become a police officer and change that.
Right.
And that's what he did. And I think that's a better way to change it. Instead of sitting there, defund the police, get rid of all the police. No, all the young people that feel like they do, encourage more of them to join the force. And
that's make the difference from within.
Change it within.
Right, right. Absolutely.
That would be the better way of solving it, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So real quick before we go to the break, did you see that video of that guy in Buffalo?
Oh yeah.
What did you, you know, somebody that he's older than you, obviously. What did you think about that?
Once I heard more about his history, I was wondering what in the world he's doing out there. He's out there and an activist and stuff, but that's no issue. And it looked worse than it was. It was more of an accident. And, I agree those officers, they charged him with assault, which they shouldn't have pushed him the way they did.
I didn't think they pushed him that hard, to be honest with you.
No, but he stumbled backwards.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, just being old. The shove
so
wasn't what...
It was more of an accident than it was like an assault.
Right.
But two, and what people don't understand, well, those officers didn't do anything. They're part of their process is they have medics behind them.
Mm-hmm.
When they're doing an operation like they were doing, they keep going forward, and if anybody's injured, the medics take care of them, and that's what happened.
Well,
we're medics behind the police, and you keep that line going.
Well, and then you could even see the guy radio right away.
They said nobody stopped to help him, but that ain't what they do,
But they did, though, because the thing is that one guy looked at down and kept going, but then after, like, the camera kind of started going off, like, the guy was, like, running in, you know, the guy that was filming it, you could see someone kneeling down to him within seconds.
Yeah.
But people don't point that part out. They just say he left him. Well, yeah, the initial one left him because they had to keep going, knowing that behind them there was going to be somebody to help him. They weren't just leaving him there just like, oh, who cares about that guy? They knew help was coming, and they're not in a position to help.
Playing the whole story, and it was the guy, you know, they, like I said, they didn't like hurt him when they pushed him. He just stumbled backwards and fell awkwardly. And that was more of an accident than it was an assault.
Right. I mean, you know? they were warning him. It's not like they just shoved him and didn't
say
anything to him.
And that's another thing. The guy's up there getting in his face and he's like that and stuff. And that's what gets me about a lot of these stuff. Look what the police are doing. We'll talk like clearing the thing there. The press is so bad about that, about misinterpreting everything. When they don't bring up the fact when they cleared them and the peaceful protesters and all, they gave them plenty of warning. We got to clear this one area.
Right.
Clear the one. Instead, more of them came and started throwing stuff at them. And that's the press doesn't tell you the whole story. Which, you can't just judge it by half a story.
Right.
And even like I said, they made it sound like they were just sitting there peacefully protesting. They just came. No, they gave them warning. They came, you know, it's a loudspeaker 3 or 4 times. You clear this one area. It was just one area they were clearing. And they didn't mention at all in the press how they started more started coming in and throwing stuff at them instead of clearing like they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're putting themselves in harm's way.
Right.
And same with this guy here. You know, like I said, he felt bad that he fell backwards and hit his head, but he was putting himself in harm's way, confronting a bunch of police officers like that. It's like, you know, the way the press handles this stuff. And are we going to talk about maybe next section? You can talk about Seattle.
Yeah. So when we come back, we can talk about that. I also wanted to talk about the other controversy that's kind of popped up, maybe not directly as a result of this, but every time this kind of thing happens, you ultimately end up having a discussion about the Confederate flag. So I'd also wanted to ask your thoughts about that as being somebody that was born in the South. So we're going to talk about both of those issues when we come back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Moderate Podcast on Anchor.fm.
Back to the Moderate Podcast, powered by Anchor.fm. By the way, just so everybody knows, I have entered the show into a contest Rode. So, we talked about the Rode mic at the beginning of the show and the Rode mics that we use. And so I have submitted the podcast into the My Rodecast 2020 contest. I'm still waiting for approval on the show that I submitted. It's like you can only do a 1 to 2 minute clip, so I submitted that. So hopefully we'll have that soon. And if we do, I'll let everybody know. I'm going to post it on our Twitter site. And what I'll ask you to do is please vote for our show so that maybe we can get the People's Choice Award on that. So I'd appreciate your support on that once it's out. And so we'll see what happens with that. So. Let's talk about Seattle. So it's funny that they're calling it now the Chaz, the Capitol Hill. What does the A stand for? I can't remember exactly.
Capitol Hill. It starts with an A. That's why they're calling it Chaz.
Yeah. Something zone. So it's called the Chaz. And why that's funny for us anyway, is because I have a cat named Chaz. So, you know, someone was saying that, you know, Chaz is the new Karen, you know, because you see those Karen, you know, have you seen those references like, oh, that Lydia's a Karen, you know, the ones that complain to the managers and whatnot. Have you heard of that term before?
No.
Oh. So there's this whole thing about that out there right now. It's like, oh, that lady's a Karen. So I guess people named Karen apparently have, you know, complain a lot. I don't know. But they're saying that Karen is the new Chaz for men. So I found that before I really knew what that meant, I had to do a little more research on it.
Is that Tiger King? Is her name
No,
Karen?
Her name's Carol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Karen is. I'll send you some stuff on that. It's pretty funny. Tell us a little bit about the Chaz. Now,
Seattle, I was going to ask you about that, like, because you're pretty close with the mayor. Mm-hmm. And the police. And I wonder, do the mayor and the police work pretty good? Because it seems like they're not working good here in Seattle. I don't know, it has to do with big city. It's the same thing in L.A. Moore isn't happy with his call for defunding the police, the
right.
mayor there.
Right.
And I think the cities work better when the mayor and the police chief are more on the same page.
Well, I think it does depend on the city. In the bigger cities, it's very different. A lot of the bigger cities tend to have what's called a strong mayor form of government, which basically means that the mayor is kind of the head of the government in terms of running it. So it's a full time job. So you know in L.A., Eric Garcetti has that role. I believe Seattle is a strong mayor because you have it's a very big city. But smaller cities like the ones I work on are what's called a council manager form of government. Basically, you have the city council. They make policy decisions. They're more the legislative piece. And then the city manager is hired by the council to actually implement policy. So they're involved in hiring all the department heads, and some cities are different. Some will have the, even though there's a city manager, the police chief may be directly elect or directly appointed by the city council. But in our case, the city manager appoints all the department heads, including the fire chief, the police chief, me as a department head in my department, and so on. So there is that. So it is a little bit different.
Yeah, like Garcetti, he appoints the police chief.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I'm sure that's what this lady does. But what's going on there in Seattle? To me, it's like she says she's calling it a block party. Obviously, she's never been to a block party. I'm just thinking how different it would be if it was a tea party and Trump supporters taking over a city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the media would give them the same. And the media is not really giving this thing a fair shake. They're not talking about it much. They're downplaying it like, oh, it's a block party. It's really peaceful and stuff. Well, you know, they're taking over an area. They shouldn't be allowed to. Businesses are in there. You're taking over a police precinct. And yep. The police chief was totally against that.
Well, of course. But yeah.
She has to go with the mayor. And she's like kind of pow-tow to the mayor because that the mayor basically wanted that and stuff. And she's thinking, and in a way, I can see her point a little. She's trying to de-escalate things. But they had 3 demands. Now they got 30 demands. And right. You can't let just a bunch of people take over and start, you know, making demands.
Well,
other people in the city too. Then not just them.
Well, there was a whole thing in the Europe that happened in the 40s that kind of thing was happening. So remember Neville Chamberlain, and with Hitler saying, "Okay, yeah. You want that thing? There's this thing. Our kids are really into this thing called oversimplified, and so look it up on YouTube. It's really really cool." Basically,
I never thought about that. Actually, that I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's
exactly.
It's like, we want this thing. Okay, you can have this thing, but that's it. Okay, now we want this thing too. Okay, well, now you can have that, but nothing else. Well, eventually, they're going to take over the whole city.
And the mayor's like, well, it's just a little section. We always close down a section for parties and stuff like in the summer. Yeah, but that's fine. You let them do that there. What's going to stop them going to another section and then another section and another precinct? Mm-hmm. And that's like you say, their problem.
Eventually, they're going to have to stand up to them and stop them.
Yeah, eventually. And she's not going to give in to all the demands. Some of the demands, she's like, oh, yeah. And well, one of the demands I just found out is let all prisoners out of jail.
All of them?
I don't think that's going to happen.
All of them? What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, are you serious? And
I've got a clip for that. I've got a clip for that.
You cannot be serious.
No, exactly. It's like when I heard that one, it's like, oh my, that was one of their demands. Well, like it wasn't their starting demand. Like I said, they had 3 regular demands. They wanted free college. They wanted free health care and defund the police.
Right.
And then it morphed into, okay, we want all this other stuff. And then you have to release, I don't know if it was all prisoners or release everybody that was convicted on marijuana, I think was a thing.
Oh, well, if it's, okay.
That might have been it. But the thing
that's
is,
okay.
Is
I can be on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see nothing wrong with that. If that's all the, but it sounded like it was more than that. But then, like you said, okay, we do that. Well, how about all the guys that were convicted on this other thing? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, where does it stop?
Right, exactly.
So it's hard to give in to demands like that. So, I'm interested to see exactly how it's going to play out. And I don't know. I don't think she's that way, but it almost sounds like she is. It's Trump, like I say, I don't agree with a lot what he says, because he says all kind of stuff, and that's what drives people crazy, especially if you hate him. You got to go by what he does. He says that, you know, if they don't do something, I'm going to do something. Well, he can't really do anything, they say.
Right.
So he doesn't help the situation by saying that.
I know. That's why.
Instead of saying that, he should just try to work with him or something. And but then you hear her side of it, she's like going, well, you know, she's like almost more determined to do it just because Trump don't want her to do it.
Well, and this is where this is where I get a problem. I have a problem with Trump. This is why, you know, in the first 3 years of his presidency, it was pretty benign in terms of, you know, various things going on. And, you know, then he got impeached and, you know, that happened in 2020, by the way, believe it or not. It doesn't even seem, it seems like such a distant memory. It seems like it happened years ago. But it still wasn't a big deal in terms of impact on the entire country. But when you get down to this kind of stuff and he says the things he says and takes the actions that he takes, that's where it's detrimental.
Well, also, when you think about it too, though, Dianne Feinstein, she's been in for 60 years. Right. Schumer's been in 47 years. So is Maxine Waters, 33 years for Nancy Pelosi. So you have all those decades of people doing stuff, and even Biden for 40-something years. And it's funny, Biden and like these Democrats, they want to reform prison and all these people locked up, you know, like, because it was the policies they set. Remember right. the policies they set for certain drugs that it affected black people more?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all in jail for that. And now they want to let them out for people they put in jail.
Right.
And so you can't really blame him for 3 years he's been in, but he's his own worst enemy saying stuff like that. And that's the thing is,
that's the thing too.
I don't have a lot of problem with what he does. I have a lot of problem with what he says.
Well, that's the thing is that it doesn't mean that the people that came before him are these, you know, saints that have done a bunch of good stuff and he's just done a bunch of bad stuff. I guess the point, though, is that, just because he's bad doesn't mean they're better. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
in terms of...
I think, too, when you really think about it, I think the reason the Democrats are acting the way they are, like in Minnesota, what they're doing there, I think they feel guilty because they've had a problem in Minnesota. And they've done nothing about it.
Right.
And Amy Schumer, she was there in Minnesota as a prosecutor, and she didn't do any police at all.
Oh, Klobuchar.
So now they're kind of feeling guilty, so they're going overboard the other way, because if they say it's, a systemic, what do they call them?
Systemic racism.
Systemic, then they were the ones that's been running it for the last 30 years.
Right.
So who are you blaming?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think they kind of felt guilty because, you know, it's been under their watch and they never really tackled the problem now. And now, so they're almost going the other way to kind of deflect, blame themselves.
Well,
now they're all of a sudden doing all this stuff and like, well, why didn't you slowly started doing this stuff before?
Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
Well, why did they let it get this far? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially in Minnesota. They let it go a long ways, like I said, until, you know, the dam broke. They should have fixed that dam, you know, start fixing it when they had cracks in it way back then.
Well, and the problem, though, is that I think that until we, and this is kind of what I said last week on the show, until we actually get to the point where both sides, all sides, not maybe, there's more than two sides to every issue. But until everyone gets on the same page and takes their share of responsibility for it, there's not going to be change. Because you could say, well, it's systemic racism, try to fix that piece of it. But that doesn't fix the culture that has developed over time, where we talk about the fact that there's 70% single motherhood or single parenthood in the black community. But the problem with looking at it just from that perspective and saying, okay, that's the thing that needs to be fixed. Why is that what is the fundamental reason that is happening? And it part of it has to do with the fact that they are in poorer communities with less access to whether it's birth control or sex education or actually, you know, caring for a kid is expensive. So when someone gets somebody pregnant and they're poor, they're going to take off. And so that's part that perpetuates, but then that perpetuates the problem, and it's this vicious cycle.
Well, and it's like a thing. It's like you say, it takes all parties to work on it, and it doesn't get fixed overnight. But a lot of it started back in the '60s and '70s when they wanted to get welfare, and then they said, okay, well, you got to be a single parent, and each kid gets so much. Because back in the '60s and stuff, more black people were married more than the white people were.
Right.
Stayed
right,
together
yeah.
longer.
Yeah.
And it kind of started from that. And then, you know, like I said, to fix one problem, they create another problem.
Yeah.
And that's what they got to get away from. They got to, and they really do. I don't know. Maybe it's the same as it always used to be. To me, it feels like they used to work together more to fix problems, which they don't nowadays.
It is going to become more divisive,
way,
yes.
They each have, there's more divide. Yeah, they just, they don't want to look like they're working with the other side. Like I said, as soon as you do anything like that, I even seen the Democratic Party when a Democrat will actually agree with a Republican about something, it's like they get denounced. Like, you can't agree with them. It's like, yeah. Well, how's that everything ever going to get done if you don't?
Well, and I think that
and it's like both sides.
Yeah, but the problem is that because the Republican Party machine has gone all in on Trump, and they kind of can't get out. So they can't, you know, they can't disagree with anything he says, even if it's more, you know, even if it's outrageous, because they're afraid of pissing off his base. And so then you see the opposite effect on the left, because they sit there and say, you can't agree with anything that Trump says, even if it's reasonable. So it's happening, these extremes are happening even more.
The good example is that one Democrat that when Trump was sitting there saying, take that drug and stuff, well, she did, and it saved her life. And she commended him for that, saying, you know, if he wasn't saying that, I wouldn't have took it, and it saved my life. She got really condemned for that. And it's like, well, you know, you can't speak your mind on either side. Like, why did they really condemn her? That's the way she felt and stuff like that. And it's like, it's just too political. And I think it's more on the big stage.
Yeah,
Washington stuff, because you know yourself, they say all that stuff, but and like Trump says all this stuff about, you know, how he's going to do this, and he can't, you know. And like I said, it comes down to governors and mayors, and your own community. You know how that is in the community, you know, that you work in, that they do work together more, because you have to, or nothing would get done.
Right.
Whereas Washington, they just like to sling arrows.
Right, and they're allowed to get away with it.
Yeah, and they get away with it. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, even Trump, like I said, what he does isn't really as bad as all the stuff he says. Mm-hmm. And he was saying about Seattle, I'm going to go in there and fix it if you don't. Well, he can't really. You know, they got to fix their own problems.
Well, and people like you and I understand that he can't do that, but I think that people in his base think that he absolutely can. Now, they don't actually follow up to see if he does, but the fact that he said, he could just look like a tough guy, and that's good enough for them. Because, oh yeah, look, Trump's tough. He's, you know, tough on those people, even though there's no chance of him doing doing what he's saying.
And it seems like if Trump does it, the Democrats want to do the opposite just because Trump does it or he says it. And it's like they got to, you know, totally fight against him about it. So that's why Washington, they're got the lowest, you know, like with each other and stuff.
Well, their approval rating for Congress is in the crapper. But then when's the one time you can fix that? Every 2 years you can fix that. And guess what? Yeah. Nothing gets fixed. All the incumbents continue to get reelected. Where are all these people that disapprove Congress? Where are they voting? Continue to vote the same way they're voting? Doesn't make any sense.
That's why I think this coming election is going to really let them know exactly, you know, because they're getting more divisive, more divisive. And we're going to find out what side the country's on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be an interesting next, you know, 5 months or so.
Yeah, I think it's really going to be, you know, and still it's too far in a way to predict anything. But and I don't even care. I think they give way too much credit, you know, for presidencies. And so what's going to be important is the Senate and Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to tell you where most people are at.
Well, the thing is that if Trump ends up winning the election, but then the GOP loses both sections of the Congress, if they lose both the House and the Senate, then nothing's really going to happen. To be at the end of the day, because there's going to be no legislation.
Really do anything.
Yeah, he's going to try to do executive orders and things and try to work around the system, and they won't let him. They just won't let him.
And they won't let him. It's the same thing what happened when Clinton was there. Remember, he didn't have the House and Senate, and they had to steer him their way.
Right.
Which they got a lot done because, you know, he had no choice.
Right. He came to the center. I just don't think Trump's going to do that, though. That's the difference.
No. No, it'll just be like a, and that's another thing too about all this lockdown that we talked about before. Everybody's saying, what's the law? You can't go out. You can't. And, but all this stuff was done with the governor's executive orders.
Mm-hmm.
There was really no law at all. Their orders is all.
Right. But there are laws. There are laws though that allow for that to happen, depending on the state.
Yeah.
The states, there's certain states that have those laws in place.
But people don't understand. They're like, oh, these people are breaking laws. They're really not. They're breaking orders.
Right, but they're
allowed to make these exact...
But they're allowed to do enforcement for that too, though. Some chose not to, but allowed to do that.
But it what always happens, it comes back to bite them in the butt, just like all these protests now. They were sitting there going, you know, they were talking about the people that were protesting the lockdown, how they were selfish, they were idiots. But you can't say that about this protest.
Well,
the Democrats can't say that at all. And they're complaining about the West Point today, him having that graduation.
That whole thing about, you know, the there was a doctor's group. I can't remember who it was, but basically, I don't remember. But anyway. They said that, well, they're okay with the protests because apparently systemic racism in America kills more people than the coronavirus. So that's why it's okay. And yet poverty caused by the closed, it doesn't. I mean, that causes health problems and death too.
Well, I'm just telling you, it just makes them look really bad when like the governor of Michigan was sitting there for 3-4 weeks solid saying, you guys got a social distance, you guys got, and then when this protest, she's walking shoulder to shoulder with the people and it wasn't social distance at all. And she's all, well, I can't do that and stuff. You know, and they're allowed to protest. Well, so was the other protesters. They're allowed, you know, that's a part of the country. You're allowed to protest whether you like it or not. And, she understood then that, oh, you know what? When you got a bunch of people protesting, it's hard to keep a social distance.
Right, exactly. And, well, and the other thing is, too, is that, you know, people like me watch this happen and we're like, wait a minute. You're saying it's not okay for this protest, but because this protest is protesting something that's killing more people than what the virus that the other ones were originally protesting about, therefore it's okay. All of a sudden now, we're not talking about science anymore. We're talking about political opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, before it was all about science, but it depends on what side of the issue you're on. And, you know, I think they way over played this pandemic. Because remember when they, it seemed like months ago, but remember they had a big pool party they had when everybody's kind of getting away from the lockdown. They're like, oh my gosh, all these
Ozarks,
people, they're going to that
or
pool party. This is just crazy.
Yeah.
They're going to kill everybody. Come to find out 3 weeks later, there wasn't from that. They're saying, well, it was just luck. there was no big outbreak.
Right.
And they were all right. together and stuff like that. And I think and they just don't really know much.
I mean,
it's getting to me more like it's like the flu. You know, the vulnerable, the older people. But from people 40 and under and your kids and stuff, the chances of them dying from it is almost nil.
Right.
And
yeah.
They might get sick, but they're not going to die from it and stuff. And I think they totally overplayed it.
Well, yeah. And I think, though, but I think, it's Monday morning quarterbacking. Hindsight's 50-50 or 20-20. But the thing is that I think
they were disingenuous about it. I think they really thought that, but it just shows you how much they didn't know about this.
Well, right. And that's what it was, a novel virus. I mean, it was something that we've never dealt with before. Yeah. But I think also in hindsight now, you know, you could say if we had done the measures we're doing now, maybe reducing capacities, maybe wearing the masks from the beginning, but not closing everything down completely, I think people would have been more on board with that. I think that would have been a reasonable approach. And hopefully if we do get a second spike, that's maybe what we do is we do the social distancing stuff. We do the mask thing, but we don't just completely shut everything down completely. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think they were like, they didn't really know what to do. And that was their, and I'm sure it saved a lot of lives, but they didn't need to, do all what they did. Just like in Sweden. Remember in Sweden, they said that 90,000 people would die?
Yeah, yeah.
Because Sweden didn't shut down. But what did Sweden do? They told all their old people, don't go out anywhere. They did quarantine the old people.
Mm-hmm.
They did, do these measures, wear a mask and stuff like that. The only difference is they didn't shut down and they had 4,000 deaths instead of 90,000 like they were predicting. So it just kind of shows you how much they didn't really know about this.
Well, and it just shows that also how New York City centralized we are. That's our entire focus because the media is headquartered there and it's our biggest city. It's our most, concentrated population, the highest density is there. And I think that shows that how much what happens in New York dictates what happens in the rest of the nation. You could have done these lockdowns in that metropolitan area. But you didn't have to necessarily apply it to the entire country. And yet California did it on a statewide basis before New York even did it. And obviously, again, in hindsight, that was maybe not the right case. And I think that maybe Gavin Newsom has learned that lesson because we have seen a little bit of a spike in the numbers, but he still hasn't stopped the reopening from happening. So the reopening is going to continue to happen. We're not going backwards or we're not freezing it. So that's a good sign, I guess, at least.
What they're showing too, though, the spike, there is a spike and it has to go coincide with testing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're going to have more people if you have more testing, but they're saying that the deaths went down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good sign.
Right. Well, and that's probably the biggest metric of all, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you about one more thing. Being from the South, being born in Texas, I wanted to ask what you thought about this big push to, and we see this happen once in a while. We see this big push to happen and then it kind of stops for a while. And that's the, taking down the Confederate statues and the Confederate flag and things like that. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I heard a lot of stuff about it, and a lot of the people are just, I think, using it as a crutch to do their point, because taking down any statue at all didn't do anything to anybody's life. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't change anybody's life for the good or for the bad by taking these statues. And now they're saying, where do you stop? You Washington owned slaves. You can't judge people. You got to judge people in their time, not in our time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in our time, that would be, but he was, the first president and all that stuff. But he did own slaves. But you got to judge him in his time. A lot of people did own slaves then. And if you want to go by that, I wonder how many of them that are sitting there saying that, like, they ought to take down his monuments and all that stuff. And not that it's going to help, You know, that doesn't do anything to anybody, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I thought about, too.
Makes you feel better, but the thing is also Barack Obama. Are you going to strike everything he did or his library? Are you going to take all his name down from everything because his mother, ancestors had slaves? You know, his mother, ancestors, and they don't even know about his father. His father was in a region where a lot of the trade slave was going on, and his father's relatives could have been.
Yeah, but we're not talking about taking down a statue of Robert E. Lee's great grandson. We're talking about the man himself. I mean, so that that's not really a good comparison.
Still goes, you know, I'm just saying you can keep equating it to that though. Like I said,
like Mount Rushmore, you have Thomas Jefferson, you've got George Washington, both of which had slaves.
But yeah, and the thing is most people don't look at these monuments as. Like changing the name Fort Bragg and Fort Benning. I didn't even know they were myself. I didn't even know they were had to do with Confederate.
Yeah,
or they were Confederate generals. And you talk to the guy that lost his legs that was a Marine. He says, you know, he went to Fort Bragg airborne, and he didn't even look at it as it's a slave name. You just think about all the people that went there and graduated through there and went to, you know, proud to be from Fort Benning because they went over, you know, they're airborne. That's kind of a big deal. And they fought, you know, for their country over in Iraq and all that stuff. They don't think about the name of it as far as, you know, it being a Confederate and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's. You know, I guess where I'm at with that though is, you know, you look at Germany, right? You're not going to find a statue of Joseph Goebbels anywhere in Germany ever.
Well, I can understand if they have a problem with those things, you know, taking them down. I wouldn't have a being from the South. I don't really. When I think of Confederate, I don't really think of slavery. I think of just the people in the South and stuff. And of their time and stuff. If you want to go back far enough, whites were enslaved, you know?
Well, yeah, in the Middle East, yeah.
And,
there has been evolution, right? I mean, we have evolved as a people over time, I mean, as a human race over time, you know? And I think that, you know, like when this country was founded, dueling was still a thing. Like you can actually legally duel. That wasn't outlawed until sometime in the 1800s. So, you know, we've evolved.
It's too, they're like, oh my gosh, we took the land over from the Indians. Well, back in the day, you know, how about the Roman Empire? They took over everybody's stuff.
Everybody, there was conquering happened all over the place.
That's just how things were. And same thing with the Indians. They were taking over each other's land even.
Well, and I think that that's also, you know, where we talk about, you know, you don't erase history, but it doesn't mean that you need to have a statue for it either. I mean, you can still teach the history. You can still teach. These are, you know, you learn from past mistakes. And we can look at that in hindsight and go, yeah, the way we treated black people was crappy. And the way, you know, the fact that they were enslaved and the fact that their own people sold them is crappy.
Well, I'm curious, too. Yeah. The thing is their own people got them, like I said, and got guns, and they sold them to the Portuguese and to the English. And, you know, more of them went to South America than they ever went here. Only 6% of them went here. And when you think about it, 600,000 came here, slaves. But since then, we've had 2 million come here freely on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's, you know, well, I'm curious what would happen if they never did have, you know, if we brought any slaves here or something like that. Would we have any blacks here? I'm sure we would. I mean, everybody wants to come to this country.
Right.
And, closing, I want to say something that, you know, he's more of a relative of yours, but friends of ours said about Texas.
Yeah.
And I agree with that sentiment. He wished that Americans loved America like Texans love Texas.
Yeah.
And it, you know, I think they do, but it doesn't sound like they do. Like there's like,
Well, I think that you can't. You can. Part of the beauty of this country is that you are allowed to not like it. You're allowed to say it. That's what. Yeah. And the ironic thing is that is exactly what makes this country so great. Is that you can't get away with saying that crap in China. You can't get away with the crap saying that crap in Saudi Arabia. They kill you for it. You know, we saw what happened in Hong Kong just not too long ago.
It goes both ways. Like I said, I get why they're upset because they had slaves and they didn't have any rights and stuff. But I don't know if there's another country that ever fought a war, killed their own brothers and sisters over freeing the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's talked up enough. I mean, not to say that, and as far as racism, I don't think it is systemic racism, and I don't see it. And I think most people don't see it. And it is on both sides. And
well, I had a theory on that.
I like to fix it, but I don't think it's ever going to go away. There are going to be people that,
Well, I think I think that the term systemic racism is absolutely the wrong term to use, because once you have somebody start to explain what that entails, there's actually some valid arguments in there. But the problem is that none of it is actually "quote unquote" racism, as we know, as the dictionary definition of racism. The dictionary definition of racism is treating somebody different simply because of their race. That's different than a race being in a position that they're in of it maybe of a disadvantage because of past history, because of past racism. And maybe not going. That's what it is. And I think once you start using these terms, whether it's systemic racism or white privilege, you're creating divisive terms just for the sake of being divisive.
Yeah. What you were talking about, like a white privilege and stuff. Do you need to tear down the white people to bring the black people up or something? I think it ain't a fact of. We have all this privilege. I think they should have the same privilege.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly it.
We should tear ours down.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's more of a case. Most of the time you find, I don't think there is. It seems like racism because let's say if they treat me nice, I treat them nice. And I think the same way if whites, that they treat nice,
And when you
whites
say
treat them nice,
and honestly,
they treat
when
whites,
you when you use term but, the, but when, then, you, when you use the term they, it just means the other person. It doesn't matter what they look like, whether it's white, Hispanic, black. If another person treats me good, I'm going to treat them good. I don't care what they look like.
Exactly. And did you see what was going on in Torrance with that lady?
I didn't see it, but I heard. I saw some of my friends making comments on it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a video. It was interesting. It was from Torrance in Wilson Park. And they come to find out what her name is. Her name is Hernandez. But she was like, I think, talking about Asians and stuff like that. And
which is a big community in Torrance.
But you're going to find, like I said, people like that. And what I was trying to say is that, it seems like racism, but... they're just saying all white people are racist. I heard people say that. Well, is de Blasio married to a black lady? Is he really a racist? And his children are pretty much black. And if white people aren't treating the black people good, I'm sure if you treat them good, they like you. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't, they'll call you a honky. Yeah. And it's vice versa, the same way. Like I said, most people if the black are treating them nice, then they treat them nice. And if one that doesn't treat them nice, then they call them the N-word or something.
Right.
And which I would never use, but that's what they use. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, they're racist. And they're not really racist, but it just seems like they are. So I think there's like there's not as much racism, you know, I'm sure there is some racism, but it's not as bad as everybody's making it out to be.
Well, it certainly probably isn't as bad here as it is in other parts of the country, too. You know, it's a lot different here, I think, in California. I mean, not that there isn't any here, but I think there is a difference, I think, regionally.
What I felt funny about that lady in Torrance I was talking about, you know who she was racist against? Asians.
I was going to say, you said Asians, yeah.
Yeah, and she's you're living in Torrance.
Well, Torrance is a very heavy Asian community. Part of that was because, very specifically Japanese. Because remember, a lot of the, Honda's still there. Toyota just moved to Texas. They were headquartered in Torrance, and then you had Nissan next door in Gardena. They've relocated to Tennessee, but so you had a lot of Japanese. Executives moved to the United States, and that's where they settled. I think right behind our house was owned by Toyota, right? And then they have their executives stay there. Some of the people that they'd have come for work, yeah. So,
but I think too, when you look at it, I think a lot of it is used as a crutch, which they take advantage of it because what happened, 200 years ago.
Well, I think the politicians take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, just like Nancy Pelosi and stuff. Why are they wearing those cloths? You know, and if anything, I think it divides them more. What if Trump just had a round table? Do you know that? You hear that? He just had a round table with trying to work with the black community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Imagine if he went to that round table wearing one of those. They'd be all over him on that.
You remember that? let's end with that analogy because remember in Seinfeld when Kramer was dating an African American woman, and so he went to the tanning booth and he stayed in too long and he came out really 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 dark, and so he goes to meet her family and they look at him like, "What the hell? What is wrong with you? I thought you were bringing me a white boy. All I see is a damn fool."
Yeah. It was like they thought he was trying too hard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's what a lot of it is. Like I said, you have the right to protest and hopefully, I think it is be for, I don't think, we'll get through this like we country gets through everything.
Right. Yeah.
Like I say, I think we will and stuff, but and when we come out the other end, we usually come out better. And like I said, with all this stuff here, I think they're overblown. Like I said, they're not all police are bad. If they need to reform the police department, by all means. But defunding is not going to get the job done. If anything, funding it. And your niece, I don't know if you know that, she's now, it took her a long while, but she's now working as a deputy in Idaho.
My niece. Yes.
Because I just talked to my brother, and I've been asking him every time, and she was still waiting and still waiting and still, how it takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And,
That's where a lot of police officers retire there, too.
Yeah. And, yeah. Because what happened in Seattle, because of all this stuff, there's guys in Seattle that's been in business there for generations. Their family has. Mm-hmm. On this business.
Yeah.
And because all this was going on, he's moving his business to Idaho.
Well, there you go.
And the thing is like you can't cut off your nose to spite your face.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Part of the problem with the politicians, what they seem to do.
Yep.
All right.
All right. We're going to wrap it up. Thank you for joining us on the Moderate Podcast this week. Remember to visit our website at themoderatepodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. Just look for the Mod Podcast 1 on Twitter, facebook.com/themoderatepodcast. We're on Minds at minds.com/themoderatepodcast. If you're looking for an alternative for social media, they're trying to put that together still. Our YouTube channel is tinyurl.com/the mod podcast YouTube. So tinyurl.com/mod podcast YouTube. We've had that for a while. You'd think I'd be able to get it right by now. So again, thanks for joining us this week, Dad. And I will see you guys next week. And until then, keep it real.